about the tales of the internet. Of the Tales of the Unexpected Tales podcast.
Right, well, we're back.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Before we're back, are you good to be back?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, that last episode took ages. But it was, I think we just do this. We like talking.
We'll probably get a little bit quicker as we go on.
Might do. I mean, we've got a story about a killer plant next, so I think this will be, hopefully this is over quickly. This is
over quickly, I think, yeah.
I know,
we've set
that.
Up the characters now, so mostly, so, yeah.
Yeah, so if you want a bit of a reminder, we got onto a train with six other white men from England, one from Scotland and one from America, and they are playing kind of tarot reading, and Peter Cushing, Van Helsing, is saying, "I'll read your fortunes if that's what you want." We've had one story, which was the lady werewolf, and now I would recommend listening to that one because it makes a bit more sense, because that's the only recap you're going to get. Just as a reminder, the tarot reading is it follows a particular destiny. That's the story that we'll see. And if you want to avoid that destiny, then you turn a fifth card,
yeah.
And that is what will be the alternative.
Well, I suppose it's worth pointing out, at this stage, the other passengers don't know what's on that fifth card. We can see it.
Yes.
Yeah,
because Cushing sort of turns it over, looks at it, immediately turns it back. He goes, "You don't need to see this."
It's a footnote.
Yeah, the werewolf story is just, I'll leave it at that. We don't know if he's telling these stories, but we assume he is. All right, okay, so Fluff wants to go now. Fluff earlier on the train, he had a doll. So,
yes.
He's sort of saying about the type of person he is, and Dracula's going, it's just a conjuring trick, a confidence trick. He says, "You know he's a family man because you saw him with a doll earlier." And then he sort of says, but he also lives in a house. Did you know that? Yeah. And he's also got a wife, and you're going to go on holiday. So he says some kind of things that I think most people, this would be down that light of psychics that aren't really psychics. Dracula could have a really good point here. So he's got to back it up, really, with some evidence. And here's the evidence. Did you see what cards that he drew when he tapped on them?
I didn't write down what he got.
Do you know what?
There has to have been something to do with gardening or shrubbery or vines.
Well, I saw two of them. One was some sort of, I don't know, it just said, he describes it as being, you've been on holiday with your wife and your daughter.
Yeah.
And so whatever that card was that gave him all that, I'm not too sure.
It's probably a skeleton with a sombrero on or something.
And then the next card, the second card, is a dog. And we know there's a dog in this one as well. It's not the werewolf. This is regular dog. The other two cards I didn't see.
The dog's not a massive part of the plot, though. But anyway, I suppose it sets the picture up.
Yeah, he has got it. He has got a role in this, but yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't make a meal of it.
There is an interesting thing about the dog, which I'll point out in a minute when we get to him.
He
comes back from holidays with his wife and daughter.
That's right. Yeah.
I look through the old IMDb at all the actors and actresses in this, and the daughter and Peter Cushing are both TOTU alumni.
Ah.
So, yeah.
Cushing we know because of the...
From Vorpal Blade.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten to on this, but it's coming. And the daughter's name is Phoebe Nichols, and she was in A Harmless Vanity. You know the one where Keith Barron has a bit on the side? Which doesn't really narrow down.
A Keith
Barron story, but it's the one where she gets killed on the beach.
She goes
to the beach with the wife and this frogman assassin kills her in the water.
Kills the wrong person.
Obviously, she's a little girl in this, but 10, 15 years later, she's Keith Barron's bit on the side in A Harmless Vanity. And they're the only two Toto connections, but that's more than enough.
I have something extra, which is Phoebe was also, not in real life, she was in the film, she was John Merrick's mum, the Elephant Man's mum.
Fantastic.
So that is a big one, that is huge role.
And actually, Freddie Francis, he did cinematography on The Elephant Man.
Oh.
So maybe he liked what he saw.
God, this is incredible.
Freddie Francis was weird. His films, as you said, that he actually directed were all of this vein.
Yeah.
You know, horror anthologies or straight horrors. But his cinematography work was a bit more, like he did three films with David Lynch, one of which is The Elephant Man. And he's also a cinematographer on Scorsese's Cape Fear. So,
that's,
some would say he went up in the world. But,
I tell you what, I'm going to leave it until it actually happens. But we've got some movie royalty in this particular piece.
Yes.
But at the time, I thought it was just funny. Right. So now we're back into it's more flash forward or flash sideways. Back home, they've come back off holiday, and the wife, as they're just about to get into the house, the wife notices a plant on the side of the house which wasn't there before. Now, damn it, I think the sun might be blocking it out. Well, there is no sun. We're in the middle of Storm Betty, or whatever that storm's called. Yes.
Babette.
Yes, she's here outside, or he, and they are here right now. And it's...
I can see a plant now to mention it, yes.
You can see the plant pot, I'm sure. Yeah. That thing I've saved from it having nothing. I've saved it. I know what I'm talking about. Well, when I say that, I don't. I really just fed it. but this one scares me because it keeps turning to different ways. I said, during a day does a plant move from side to side? And what I found was, I didn't answer my own question, but I found a walking tree. And there's it doesn't walk like, you know, to the shops. What it does is, it over a period of time, its roots kind of, I'm doing a kind of creeping hand effect.
Yeah.
Through woodland. It's like an ent, but it does it over a long period of time. These things are cleverer than you take them for. That's what I'm saying.
Definitely.
Anyway, so she says, well, we'll have to murder the plant because it's going to kill off the hydrangeas. And they're like bedding plants, aren't they? They're other ones. They're prettier plants than this monstrosity.
Yeah, she's more or less calling this thing a weed, really.
Yeah,
she's not happy with it.
She isn't. And some might say that the plant isn't happy with what it's just heard. he goes, the man, this is Bill Rogers, he goes, well, it looks like back to work.
Hot pickers. Not off. That was him, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, that's right. Not off.
Did you cut the plant in half? Not off.
Couldn't do it with this one. He has a go. We'll come to that in a second. But when, so he goes, right, it's back to work, then comedy, sort of like walk away. And then it's like you see the plant and it sort of does like a, look, it, that turns to look at them.
Yeah,
do you see that?
It follows him out of the yard.
And I put here, comedy turn to camera by plant. It's like, kind of just looks at the, starts shaking its head, like, wah, wah, wah. Well, I think the plant would have been all right had it not been for the fact that the wife wants to murder it. And that's the first time I've made that connection. She's saying, get rid of it. I'm not having it. What if she'd have come back and said, that is beautiful?
To be honest, it adds to this garden, because did you think this garden looked a bit crap?
It was shit. It's in a studio. That's one thing. So they can't do much with that.
But it's really, like,
it's really bad.
It's really high walls. They clearly live. The house is okay. It looks like a decent pad. They look like, I mean, he's an architect, so he has a few quid.
Oh, is he an architect as well?
Oh, sorry, no. No, you're right. I don't know why he did. Well, that's what I wondered about him. Because we see in a minute, does he work for the Ministry of Defence? Otherwise, why is he able to go in and talk to these two blokes straight away
about
this strange plant?
Do you know...
Anyway, I'm jumping ahead a little bit.
I had to rewind this a few times because I had that problem. It's like... You can't just get an appointment with MI6. It's like, how's this worked? It's just, I suppose it's all down to what you say. There's a plant loose on my property. Let's get the boys in. So anyway, like now we do see the plant actually moving again, and it's like creeping. This isn't time-lapse photography, not what I'm describing with my plant over here. This is moving just as it's... As it happens, it's like, real life. Somebody's pushing it along. That's what I'm trying to say.
There's a lot of hands just out of camera shot here, shaking things.
Anyway, so it's funny because now Fluff has got a cig on, and he checks to see if his hoe is sharp enough, like we all do. Mm. And then he goes and... bangs at it. Off camera, we hear, ow! Right? Now, I thought, it's done something to Bill. And
The wife runs out. She's over the other side of the prison yard. It does look like it's a prison yard. Yeah, it's like, allowed them to plant something.
Sort of sectioned off. So she says, what's up? And he goes, when I tried to have a... cut that plant, I'm sure it yelled out in pain. So that ow, which was clear, it's in fact, if I can, I'll get that sound bite and I'll put it here. Right. So that is a person going ow.
Yes.
So anyway,
now as well as that, that's a pretty decent Toto connection, isn't it?
With the sound of silence or whatever. Sound machine. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
sound and catastrophe.
This one is like he doesn't need a machine to hear this the fella off camera going, ow!
Yeah. Well, actually, now that you mentioned that whoever it is off camera, that could explain the weird thing about the dog, which we'll come to in a sec. But yeah.
Yes. Yeah, good point.
So he gets the garden shears next.
Yeah, that's right. And then we see this now. It sort of chucks the shears away, but really quite violent. Like it could have ended up in the child's face, or
telekinetic powers to fire it across the prison yard.
Or just a really strong leaf. I've been working out. Right, it's not right. He's not getting very far with this. So he does the thing that anybody would do, and that's go to speak to MI6. Or as it's described here, the Ministry of Defence. But I'll tell you why I put MI6 is because it's M. He goes to see M, who's
basically playing M.
Yeah, with his
sitting on his arse in an office. Yeah.
Because I'll come back to that in a second. But there's another guy. His name is Jeremy Kemp, right? And he was in Zed Cars, actually.
Yeah.
But he has the neatest haircut. Now, he's at the moment, he's just an extra. His work is it looks like he's being busy in the office of the Ministry of Defence. But then he's going to get called out in a second. And his role is fantastic. I absolutely love his scene. So Jeremy Kemp's worth the call out. Bernard Lee, of course, is the call out. And now, that's it. We're back home now. This research team, which is one person, Jeremy Kemp,
is
setting up like microscopes and stuff. And it means that he's a bit busy doing that and not watching the plant for some reason.
Yeah.
The kid's playing with the ball and the dog.
Yeah. And this is where this is where we hear the dog barking.
Yeah.
But it's clearly a human just going over and over again. Like, could they not have got that dog to bark to make it genuine? It's so It's Alan Freeman in just off camera going. Roo, 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 roo.
So I wrote here. So she, somebody says, come in. I guess it's the mum says, come in for your dinner, lunch. Yeah. And she launches the ball up into the air. And I wrote, and then the plant volleys it into the top right corner. But that isn't what happens. What the plant does, because the dog's gone over to sniff it and presumably piss up against it. Yeah. And it gets sort of tangled in the vines.
Yeah.
I don't want to laugh because I don't like, you know, cruelty to animals or anything like that. But it fucking kills the dog with its... But meanwhile, the research team is still pissing about with his microscope. But the dog's... That's it. The dog is no more.
Mm.
They go out to it, scream, ah! Is that right? Have I got that right?
I think so, yeah. And did they go back to... MI6 then?
Back to MI6. They're just puzzled.
That's clearly something M needs to know about straight away.
But
they have another meeting.
Yeah. So he's sat there with his pipe. What sort of pipe is it? Is it this sort of pipe? I've got like a I've got a pipe that when you take the end off, it's a pen. So it's like
okay. I thought you were going to say it was a vape.
It's a Bond gadget, this.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So I can pretend to smoke, but secretly write down notes. Mm. Anyway, so he's sat there. Now, the focusing on this scene is brilliant because you've got Bernard Hill. Hang on, is his name? Bernard Lee, sorry. He's sat there like that, always just looking off camera, smoking his pipe. In the meantime, research team, Jeremy Kemp and presumably somebody else, they're discussing... What do they have to do? What is the motivation behind this intelligent thing? And I written down, I thought this would be a good opportunity for, because we go through some flower lecture as well. If you're paying attention, you see.
Yeah, it's a bit, I was trying to follow that, thinking it would be really important, but... I don't know if it is, but this basically is... names off. It's like being in a science lesson for 30 seconds.
Yeah, because what they're saying, this is why I thought it was going in a particular direction, because they're saying that all types of plant demonstrate this ability to defend themselves, right? Mm. So it's like a history lesson of plants defending themselves. So I thought we were going to go down the, let's weaponize it. Let's put it in a lab. And make it understand who the bad guys are, and but wait, M is not happy. He needs to work fast. His quote is, "Plants like this could take over the world."
Yeah, and, yeah. That's what he was kind of speculating on as he was staring off into the distance. And at that point, he really reminded me of. Do you remember the older guy in The Thing? Who comes to the same conclusion very quickly.
Oh, yes.
When he works out on the computer how quickly the thing would spread and kill mankind, and then he goes, doolally. It was very like that for me.
Do you think that this thing would take over the world, or once it got to the edge of Britain, do you think it'd just go, yeah, we're sort of screwed now?
Well, since you said it about the wife, as long as he's not being chopped down out of that garden, maybe he's happy with that.
I just think, well, we were fine until you tried to kill us.
Yeah.
So M goes, and I wrote down just my own little edit, which is, a plant like this could take over the world. Get me Bond. I just thought that moment needed it. The guy's back at the house again. He sits. This is Jeremy Kemp, one-man research team. He's back at the house again, and he sits next to an open window.
Yeah, with his back to the window, well, of course.
Yeah, because he's not actually observing anything. He's looking at things through... He does something really scientific. He looks through the thing. He sees bacteria moving, and then he goes, just as I thought.
He sees a brain. He says, just as I thought, it has a brain.
Oh, that's...
So first of all, what's it... Like, presumably he's chopped something off the plant to be able to examine it under the microscope. And that's one of the things the plant really doesn't like. So it allowed him to chop off a leaf or two, go into the lab or the sitting room, find his brain. He didn't just chop off any leaf. He found the leaf with the brain in it.
I never even did that work. That's brilliant. Well,
yeah, the plant's not happy.
Now here's, yeah, so here's the bit where this is kind of, it felt like a trope, even though I've not seen many plant murder movies. This felt like like the lady is walking in with some lunch, but she's walking into the house and she's got a tray that can be easily dropped. You see what I mean?
It's as soon as you've seen that, you went, that's gone flying.
So she comes in with the tray and she didn't come in with the tray, sorry. She's walking through the house with the tray and she's about to deliver it, but then the little girl takes her attention. So now we cut to him in the open windowed room, but he's facing away, and now we see over his shoulder some shaky plant movement as it kind of like it gets closer and closer, and then right, so this scene does last a little while, and that was quite good because it allowed me to write my notes a bit. The woman comes in and she sees him dead. He's kind of been suffocated by the plant and stuff, but what's hilarious, tray drops, okay,
tray
so
gone, yeah,
tick. But in over to one side, kind of the right hand side, we see the plant sort of scarper out of the, do you think,
back and out of the room,
do you think it was thinking, well, I don't want to be left at the scene of the crime, because then I'm sort of culpable for this, but I'll have to leave. So it just kind of backs out. It's the most hilarious thing.
M finally gets up out of his chair and leaves the office.
M's in the people's house, the person's house now. What are they called? They're called the Rogers. They're in the Rogers' house. And then he realises something. Whilst
he stands over by the window and he lights his pipe, the plant winces away from the window a bit.
It doesn't like the flame.
Doesn't like fire.
Aha! Let me get
The plant has cut the phone line as
yes,
well.
Yes, that's right. So he goes over to the it goes over to the phone, and then you see the plant clip the wires with its own hand?
Or one plant? Of its own branches or something,
Anyway, but because the phone line is no more, he has to leave via foot. But he's trapped. So he sets fire to a newspaper and kind of wafts it around outside and creates a pathway for himself.
And this was really, when he opened the door, first of all, that was really obvious that it was just somebody shaking a branch in the doorway.
I think just in case, they've probably painted some guy's hand green who was and then if it came onto camera, it would have been
you can pass it on, pass it off. So he just waves his way around, but he just leaves the family totally there. Just, I'm out of here. Good luck with that.
You can hear.
I think they do say, I'll go and get help, but you think, just to be on the safe side, he'd take the family with him, or at least the woman and child.
What could possibly be the plan? Set fire to it? Is that?
I don't think Em is thinking about a long-term plan. He just wants to get out of there.
In the background, you can hear the car start up and zoom off.
Yeah,
which is,
and leave.
You don't often. It felt so deliberate.
He got out of there so quickly. He didn't give them, that family, a second thought.
And actually, really, we're coming up to the what could be the twist, because it all seems like kind of like it's going in one direction. Well, the twist feels like it's just because afterwards you see the paper on the floor that's been set on fire, that was used to get the thing away, and the kind of plant goes over and
puts it out.
That's it out. Yeah. So it looks like
Fluff has said to the wife, puts his arm around her, oh, we'll be all right now, meaning Em has gone off to get
more fire.
Reinforcements. More fire, which he should have done. He should have come with more people to begin with, because there's a dead body to pick up.
Yes.
But yeah, is the are they insinuating with the plant stamping out the fire that it's no longer afraid of fire?
I think so. It's evolved. It's now, yeah. It's built. But I still think that probably what you could do before this plant goes into somebody else's garden is to try setting fire to it. Like that's, like yeah. we say in Totu, really importantly are the next 5 minutes that we don't see. What happens next? Which direction does it go? This is one of those yeah. occasions where I think I'd like to know a little bit more. Like I think when you look back at all of these stories, this is the one that has the least repercussion. It's a plant yeah. that's afraid of fire.
What if there was a really creepy twist to this one? That we don't see him. As you say, we heard the car heading off. We don't see it. What if the plant killed them, wasn't really afraid of the fire, killed them, and then it was got in the car and drove it round the corner to make Fluff think that he'd gotten away. And I really want to see a bloke dressed up in a plant costume driving the car then.
This is right. That is the bit where you could go back a few lines, and this is the bit where M would just say off camera, a plant like this could take over the world. That yeah. a plant that drives can take over the world. So right, that's it. We're
back to the carriage.
We're thinking and that's right, yeah. So we're thinking, right, we might not be actually, but this particular storyline, it ends in some sort of tragedy, but not necessarily death. So he goes, oh, that's a weird one, that, isn't it? Well, what is the alternative to this? Card turns over, it's death. And again, they don't see it, do they?
He doesn't see it.
Yeah. Nobody sees it. He goes, ah, oh, you don't need to know. You're going to win the lottery. So just you go that way.
Yeah. So again, if you think about that, fair enough, death's not a great choice for Fluff, but that's the choice between him dying is the choice between that and a plant apocalypse for yeah. the whole planet.
And whilst there's a werewolf on the loose as well.
Yeah.
These things are, we've forgotten about that, aren't we? That those things aren't kind of, mind you, one is isolated to the Hebrides. So anyway.
Yeah.
Now then, next up. As he sort of like, who wants a slice of the cake? This is Peter Cushing. Who wants a slice of my taro cake? And everybody goes, no, not me, not me. And then he just puts it under Roy Castle's nose. And now, I think for a number of reasons, this is my favourite.
Roy Castle really is the star of this film, looking back on it, isn't he?
Yeah.
Whether that was intentional or not, he's the memorable yeah. character from it.
This is the one that, you see, I don't actually remember this one. When I watched this back, and I'd had a couple of extra stories in, but the one I remembered from this one was Disembodied Hand, right? That's the one. Right. And again, I thought that was a film on its own. I remember yeah. that being like 2 hours long. But this one, after watching this, I had, my notes aren't longer, but I had more to think about and do with this story. So let's jump in. So
there is. There's a lot in it.
After this is another thing as well. So far we've had two people been told that your world is going to end, or you're going to die. Your world is going to end again, right?
So yeah.
If you're told that, what's the incentive of now having your tarot? I'd be going, hang on a minute, I was okay with this a bit ago, but now I'll be all right. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But Castle, you can tell he's that kid in the school who'd have done everything once.
Yeah.
maybe just to get the laughs. But
yeah. He's a mixture, as I say, of a real jolly character, slightly nervous. And I don't know, maybe he just felt pressurized at this stage to go, this is my turn. Yeah. You know, everyone's looking at me, I'll go along with it. But his way of coping with that is to make jokes.
And here's
which
one.
Which he does here yeah. again. He makes a mother-in-law joke.
Yeah, he says, because as he's turning over the cards, we get a musician. And that musician one is, you can tell it's a musician because the angel is playing a trumpet or something. Now, he does some other ones, and one of the cards looks like a hideous thing.
Yeah, there was a pretty female guard. Yes. And Roy Castle says, that's more like it, which is a little bit lecherous.
So he's comparing the ugly one to his mother-in-law. Yeah. Yeah. And then, I think it might have even been before that, he goes, first I've ever done this without chips. I think that must be a poker,
some sort of gambling reference, yeah. But I don't know about you, for a split second I did picture a bag of chips.
That's exactly what I did, yeah.
And a Savile I hooked on and go.
Just, I don't know if this is limited to Belfast Airport, but when I was over in Belfast Airport, I had a bag of crisps called Taters or something like that.
Tatoes,
right.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Is that like the Walkers of the West?
Yes, and there's a divide. There's a, you know, Blind Boy. From the Rubber Bandits, he does a podcast.
Oh, no.
He's a comedian stroke rap artist, whatever, but he does a podcast. He christened the Tato up north Protestant Tato because it's different packaging, basically. Tato would be the number one crisp down here.
Really?
In the Republic. And it's up north as well. I don't know. I mean, we have Golden Wonder and all the rest down here as well. Yeah. But yeah, there's a clear difference in the packet. There's still the same bloke who's basically a potato in a suit or, you know, a jacket, Mr. Tato. But he's different. He looks different up north than he does down here. Our theme park, it's only recently changed name to Emerald Park, but it was called Tato Park.
Oh, my goodness.
5 or 6 years of its existence, and it was all based around Mr. Tato, and the factory was beside it.
Because you go abroad and you see, like, the Walker's equivalent, which is Lay's. It feels like Walker's is... just only for over here. So anyway, I would arrive in Belfast Airport when I was doing a lot of work over in Derry, and I would need a snack. I'd put my money into the machine, and I'd get out. It would pop bag of potatoes. And that was a lot. That was probably I did 18 trips, so I had about 40 bags of potatoes. Right. Okay. Now then, this story. So he taps the thing, and now we go into Biff Bailey, who is
Biff
played
Bailey,
by
yeah.
Roy Castle. And he is, well, this is the part where I sort of like, I put Roy Castle doing his own stunts. Because of course, he was a trumpet man. He was a jazz trumpet guy in real life. He used to do a show called Record Breakers, and... I think at the beginning of Record Breakers, he would also play the trumpet as part of the thing. So, I forgot just how much of like my youth would have been watching Roy Castle. You sort of forget that he was a massive part of growing up.
More so, I would have known him more so for Record Breakers than ever being in films.
Oh, definitely. Has he been in any other films?
In fairness, he wasn't in too many, but he was in one of the Carry Ons. He was one of these classic kind of straight men in Carry On films who, a similar character, whereas he's, you know, fumbling around, a bit clumsy, but ultimately he's the butt of the jokes more so than making the jokes.
Yes, and that's the thing, is because these jokes, he's not making anybody laugh on the train, right?
No.
So we know that they're bad, but I think that the film company are going, oh, Roy, did you have to? He's like, I would like to think that these weren't scripted jokes that he's doing. I'll show you what he was on. He was in Sink the Bismarck. And in that, he played a seaman. And Light Up the Skies, that sounds like another kind of...
He was in the Doctor Who, I think.
He was in Doctor Who and the Daleks. And his character in Doctor Who and the Daleks? Ian Chesterton.
Okay, that sounds like some sort of sidekick rather than a villain.
just me. Carry On Up the Khyber. That's the one that you were... Oh, and check this out. Legend of the Werewolf, 1975, and he played a photographer. So we join him doing his own... And I mean, it sounds good. This is upbeat jazz.
Yeah, and he's got the band. I think I seen on the credits that this was a real band that they got in for this.
Definitely.
They don't have any lines. None of them speak whatsoever, other than kind of mumbles.
That's right. One of them looks a bit like James Corden, right? And we get him in because he's got one of them faces. So he's the one that when we go abroad, and then but he kind of like, he's doing his own, he's the flute player, by the way. So anyway, someone comes in and he looks very flamboyant.
Like, yeah, he's like their manager, agent. Yeah. I think he does own this club that they're playing in, but he's also their agent for getting them gigs elsewhere.
That's right. So Roy Castle sees him, goes over and says, have we got any lineups coming up? And he goes, yeah, I found you a club in the West Indies called the Flamingo. It seems like it's a bit of a trip just for one night at in the Flamingo. I mean, it's not even a residency. It's just a night in the club.
Yeah, it is. And apparently it's not what they're used to. Like, Roy Castle's making jokes that they'd usually be sent to, you know, Butlins or Siberia, I think he says.
Yeah.
The West Indies.
Yeah,
he
now
gets very excited about that.
And he demonstrates that excitement.
Oh my God, does he ever.
I don't think we should try this.
No.
But
all we can say is he does not pull off a what I think would be a West Indies accent.
What he's actually saying is let's get ready for the West Indies. But he says it. I mean, if you're okay and you want to hear it, listen to it will make you laugh, but for the right reason, not because it's bad, but because you go, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening.
And was that the intention? Was the director's intention to make him look like an absolute plonker here?
No, I think the director was going, we need somebody to do the accent. Roy, are you up for this? And he goes, absolutely. Yeah, no worries. But I don't blame Roy at all.
Yeah.
Now then, it's kind of like one of those flash forwards. We're in the club. In the Flamingo.
Yeah. I think it shows does it show a shot of the outside beach? And obviously they're nowhere near that. Yeah. They've just
stock footage.
Stock photo,
And inside we've got Kenny Lynch and his band playing and singing.
He's doing this is obviously one of his own songs.
I mean, that's what it says at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's the chitter chatter.
Sounds a bit like Under the Sea from The Little Mermaid. It has a lot of steel drums in it.
Yes, that's right, yeah. And it's the chitter-chatter of everybody's, like, the place is heaving. It's a really popular, And now, Kenny, after he's finished his bit, Kenny Lynch goes, is that his name? Yeah, Kenny Lynch goes over to speak to Roy Castle and two of the band members. And it looks like these are the only two band members that were allowed to come on the holiday. Is that right?
Well, certainly the only two that are allowed to look like they're about to say something. Because we don't actually see. Yeah, you're right. We don't actually see the full band performing over there. Yeah.
And that it's was just presumably what the agent had organised. that's right, isn't it? He said, I've got you a... So, well... the idea is, I guess, to network. They're networking with Kenny Lynch. Kenny Lynch knows what he's doing over there, so he'll be your guy. And actually, by the end of this, Kenny Lynch and Roy Castle become pretty good friends.
They do. Roy mistakes him for a local, though, at the start. He thinks it's great to hear somebody doing that calypso music in the authentic voice. And Kenny Lynch is like, what are you talking about, Governor? I'm allowed to do an accent like that. I'm okay.
He does do that, though. He does say, I'm from the East End, mate.
Yeah, yeah. And Roy Castle, again, is doing the whole, hey, man, groovy. Great to meet another jazz head.
And he's... I've put here, I can see where the voodoo's going to go now. Because it has got, like, we're being set up here, right? And I made the mistake recently on the other podcast that I do of quoting voodoo coming from the wrong place. I thought it was kind of Aztecs, you know, that Inca, or you know, I thought it was generic. Voodoo is not, and I think is it Haiti?
Yes,
something it's something like that. I might be wrong about that as well. So
it's definitely that neck of the woods.
Yeah, and it's yeah. that's it. And we, so we're setting up and you go, aha, this the title Voodoo now makes a bit more sense than this kind of club in the East End of London. Yeah. Right, so they introduce and find, what have I got here? Find
there's
out.
There's a girl selling cigarettes on off one of those old...
Yeah,
like she's got the tray wrapped around her neck, kind of thing, like in the cinema.
That's where I put
the popcorn. But
I put cinema ice cream lady turns up. I can't remember. Yeah. I can't see what I've. Oh, that's it. Sorry, I've just put here. They're both
cinema ice cream lady.
Yeah, I mean, or man, or they. Yeah, it's a multi. Anybody could do it. I've just put here. I couldn't read my handwriting. It says they're both from London. So that's that. Then. This is an interesting one because he fondles her ring. doesn't he? He goes over and he fondles her ring.
He does.
And then he calls it. That's a monster.
He is slightly lecherous again here. Bearing in mind that he's mentioned his mother-in-law, so presumably, well, maybe he's divorced or separated, but, you know, he's... He says, oh, I think I'm old enough to smoke, and stands up to buy some fags off her. But as you say, ends up fondling her monster ring.
Now,
and basically takes the piss out of this god.
Yeah, so, right, let's, right. The monster, hang on a second, sorry. The monster ring is literally that, no, it's not literally that. The ring is literally a ring. He describes it as being a monster because it is quite big. But when, once he's done the fondling, that it's like that bit in a Wild West movie where everybody stops and sort of looks around. The piano
the music
play,
stops.
The
as
music
well.
Stops. Turn the music off. Everybody looks at him and he's like, oh, shit. Now, he sort of like says, I'm sorry about that. And then when he sits back down and he gets the backstory, everybody's back talking again.
Yeah.
As if nothing happened. And it was so what I was thinking here was, this is one of them places where everybody is under a spell and they've sensed it. Now, that might be the case, but it certainly doesn't say it's not the case.
Well, they were certainly wearing a lot of merchandise for this god. There was people wearing, you know, T-shirts and headbands.
There is, isn't there? There's medallions. It's just an overly used pattern.
They should have had an old DJ with an American bass bottle jacket and Dembala on the back.
That's right, pot pickers.
So Kenny, who's been there a while, he explains, you need to stop now. This is the local god. You don't take the Mickey out of Dembala.
No, and so Dembala is a real god. I don't know if you... I was a bit cautious at first.
Or real as in he wasn't created for this.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Well, he could be real. Look, we're not here to speculate.
No. If it gets a bit windy in the next few minutes, just I will apologise.
We need to calm down.
Yeah.
I like when these gods are mentioned in films or TV shows and, you know, demons or whatever you want to call. There could be people.
He's probably a nice guy.
Yeah. But, you know, like the one in Hereditary. Payman. Like, as soon as I seen that film, I had to read up on him. And that's what you read up on is even more scary than the film.
Well, I did the same with Pazuzu.
Super
interested in what Pazuzu was about. Anyway.
But did you notice on Dembala, he's the god that Chucky prays to in Child's Play. He's the god.
No!
He's the one that turns Brad Dourif into Chucky.
Right. So, you see, you know what? This story doesn't paint the god to be a rough god, right? Because actually, we'll get to it, but Roy brings a lot of this on himself. If it had just not done out, it'd have been right.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll get to that bit then. So, Dembala is, lovely guy. And we just said everybody's wearing some sort of symbol of this. Now, They have to get in. This is just a point that I like to every now and then. You just go, oh, that was an interesting camera angle. They all get in quite close to tell their stories, and then sort of the James Corden character, he kind of leans in the closest, and he's getting really excited,
but yet doesn't say anything.
Yeah, and you see what they're talking about. Yeah, that's right. He didn't get a speaking line, did he? What they're talking about is, well, Kenny Lynch is talking about is they worship this god, right? Mm. And if you look out your window, you might be able to hear the kind of rhythmic sounds. And
locals are gathering down in the jungle or
in the jungle areas. Yeah. And in there, you've got like half naked women, and I've just put here Roy, fueled by the images of naked chicks and jazz, decides to spy on the ceremony.
He thinks he's going to some sort of dogging spot.
He brings his notepad and pen.
He does, yeah.
That can't have been part of his plan. He can't possibly have gone, if I head down there, I might get an idea for a tune. Because he wouldn't have known.
Unless he carries stuff like that with him all the time, with that in mind.
This is Roy Castle we're talking about. Of course he does. He's always thinking about what is next.
Yeah, if he thinks he's going to an orgy, he's going to bring the notepad.
Well, he's listening to the tune. He starts writing it down. Now, I'm no musician, but for me, that was... Wait there. I'll get my bongos out again. For me, that was this. Right, and he's going, I love that sound. And he's writing it, and he writes out a quaver. I don't know what you call that, the musical, you know, the lines. Yeah. And he starts putting them down. Whilst he's doing that, we see images, so it's cutscene between.
Oh, it's brilliant, yeah. Yeah, I love this.
So he writes down, you describe it.
Well, it shows the group doing their normal chanting and having a party down in the centre. But every time the camera pans back to Roy writing down the notes, more and more of the local tribesmen appear behind him. It reminded me of in The Birds, you know, when Tippi Hedren's sitting on the park bench every time she looked at the child's playground, there was more and more birds. It was like that.
Yeah.
And it gets so ridiculous that there's one right up in his face, right beside him. And eventually you see by his eyes that he cops somebody's there. But he's still afraid to look at them.
Yeah. So you're right. There's one. We cut away. Come back. Two. We come away. Come back. Three. It gets to four. I didn't count a fifth. Right.
Yeah.
But I wrote down here, he's been fingered.
It was missing. He could have done with another one of his. He could have done with Corden or somebody there beside him. So that he could say the line, they're behind me, aren't they? But he gets frog marched down to the centre of the party.
Yeah. The main ceremony guy.
Yeah.
He's wearing like a wooden mask, you know, with that kind of image, the symbolism on it, right? And I don't know if this was meant to be a joke. He takes off the mask and it's just like a normal guy's face underneath. And Roy Castle goes, like he was doing a joke, like it's more scary with the mask off. I wasn't too sure because I thought that was probably a bit before its time.
I don't know. I think they genuinely thought that this actor they got was a frightening looking bloke. And he's not really.
The guy is explaining to Roy Castle that Dambala is a jealous god. If you steal his... Oh, because that's right. Roy Castle said, I've only come here to get that song onto paper. And I'm thinking, I could release it. We'll go 50-50. That's what he said.
He says it could be a hit.
Because it is just, remember that music I played you. It was just that. In fact, mine was probably better.
He didn't really stumble across Bohemian Rhapsody or anything.
And that would have been about this time, wouldn't it? When was...
65...
Was
Bohemian... Not too long. Bohemian Rhapsody was probably early 70s, was it? Although I don't know when it was written.
I don't either, anyway. So, yeah, you're
Freddie
right.
Freddie probably knocked that up when he was 9 or something.
Watching a religious ceremony, obviously. Okay, so this is the way that Roy Castle thinks. He immediately wants to put dollars and pounds next to this sort of stuff. So the guy goes, no, if you steal this, Dambala is going to come after your ass, right? So he's going to be mad. And then he throws him to the floor and then Castle runs out.
Yeah.
Next scene.
And they carry on.
After all of that horror, the next scene is Roy Castle explaining, yeah, I'm going to put that on to record. No issues. No issues. Yeah. Kenny Lynch, of course, is there, is the everyday man. Are you sure you want to do this? And then...
There's another little comic spot, isn't there?
Yeah, this is now Roy Castle. Again, I really like the guy, so I don't want to go hard on him, but I think this might have been one of his own ideas too. Except, yeah. So explain what happens.
So, as you said, Kenny Lynch has warned him, you really shouldn't do this, you're messing around with, you know, voodoo stuff, and he goes, oh, something along the lines of, oh, what can Dambala do to me, yeah? As he's leaning on a railing, it looks like it's in the club.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah.
The Flamingo Club, but... The railing gives way and he falls, and then he's in, well, I was going to say swimming pool, but it looks like he falls into some sort of pond.
Yeah, it's got
the creeping vine is in there, I think.
There's a nice bit though, so we're looking at the veranda scene. Yeah. When he falls through, you can sort of see the impact of the crash mat as his feet kind of bounce back up again. It's not a bad, like, you just needed to cut it a bit sooner. That's what I was thinking.
That's a real carry-on moment,
isn't it? Yeah. I tell you what, right in the middle, this is where it's a little bit of horror, but it's light relief. This is the book you probably remember the most. So they're in, now this is now, you've got to be careful, Manny says, and then a few minutes later, they're back in the club in... Kenny Lynch has found himself in the band as well, so he's made a deal, and this is Roy Castle, the Roy Castle and Kenny Lynch band.
They have a conversation mid-song as well on stage. Yeah. So the acoustics are strange in here because Kenny Lynch doesn't need a microphone. The band are full blaring their music. I mean, it's trumpets and saxophones, but Roy Castle and him can have a pretty normal volumed conversation in the middle of this.
That was my favourite bit, is how... So Kenny Lynch is singing, and his voice, it's like he's got a switch in his throat that turns it onto microphone mode. And so he finishes one verse, and then he kind of like shuffles over to Roy Castle. Castle takes his trumpet down. Lynch goes, are you still going to do that voodoo thing? Yeah. And he explains, yeah, I've got a nice little spot for it. I know exactly what I'm going to do with it. Now, that doesn't make sense to what happens later either. So then Lynch goes, right, great. Switches the microphone mode on again, and he's back singing.
Finishes the song, yeah.
Which is it's just weird. Anyway, presumably, he's told the band, I'm going to do a bit of a voodoo solo, right? Are you comfortable with it? Yeah. But what's weird is when he says to Lynch, are you still going to do it? And he goes, yeah, I think I've worked it out. He's introduced as his next song as being during a trip to the West Indies.
Yeah.
Biff stolen an ancient voodoo tune and he's going to play it for you now.
Fully admits to it.
Yeah. So, this is not kind of like just slipping it in to the song or just doing it as part of a solo, but it's all announced.
Yeah, I'm fully plagiarising here from a religion.
So,
and they've set up them a huge mask of Dambala in the background of the stage as well. So they're totally taking the mickey out of him at this
Yeah, that's right. He
pulls a face at it or something and the crowd laughs.
He walks up to it and sticks his head inside the mouth of the... and then he goes, like that, all Alan Partridge-y. And he gets the laugh from the crowd. It's just weird, man. Anyway, so then we've got Lizzo comes on stage with his flute. The James Corden character. Now, this is the bit which, again, if you wanted to go, hang on a minute, the continuity is all wrong here. Lynch is not happy. He's at the side. He's just going, no, I don't want to be here for this. And then in the background, you start to see different supernatural occurrences.
Well, you see a door opening and closing, yeah?
That's supernatural occurrence one.
Yeah.
Well, that could just
and
be
the
wind.
Picks up. Yeah.
And that, but the band carry on playing. This is important.
Yeah. The manager is there as well, and he starts getting, you know, all in a kerfuffle. But yeah. At no point does he attempt to close the doors.
No.
Or say causing the wind.
And the band
or stop
not
playing.
Saying, yeah. Could you just? What the hell's going on here? We need less wind.
And then the wind really picks up, and there's lots of newspaper flying around like it's out in an alleyway somewhere. Which I suppose they could have blown in the French doors.
It could, yeah. I'd not thought about that. They could have used serviettes, tables yeah. sort of picking up and stuff.
And then when the wind is at its strongest, it shows the band, and it's like they're in the Earth Song video. You know, the Michael Jackson, where they're playing away regardless of this massive storm going on around them.
And eventually they do stop, and the...
But everyone's run out. The audience is gone.
So the agent, who now it turns out owns the club that they're in, he's got, my beautiful club. And I think they said, you'd be able to claim all this on insurance. He goes, I'll do it all up then. I'll put a hot tub over there and a kitchen over there.
But all that's happened, like in fairness, all that happened to his beautiful club was a few chairs got knocked over and there's a bit of newspaper around it. He's going to have to really exaggerate that claim on the insurance form. He's going to get Kenny Lynch to start shitting in the corner or something. Come on, we need to really make this look bad.
So then now is a sequence of events here. This was good because when they're talking, I find myself writing less, so I have to pause. But this is now largely in just the sounds of the, you know, effects and stuff. Roy's finished. It goes sort of like, right. Something went a bit odd in the middle there, because if you notice, whilst he was playing, his fingers were seizing up. He goes, I'm going to have to work that bit out again. So I'll ignore the fact that this might be voodoo and just concentrate solely on rewriting this little section. Well, this is the bit that we hinted at earlier. As he's walking down the road and the wind starts up again, he sees a black man, and that scares him.
Yeah,
and that's the problem that I've got, is because
yeah,
I know what they're saying is like, this reminds you of your time in, but that's not what's coming across, is it?
It's they could have used anyone.
Yes,
jumping out, scaring them, and they do that again with another couple of blokes.
Yeah, a
couple of Americans.
But you can see, you can see what they're getting at here. I like this bit. Let's get back into the less racist things. As he's stumbling, he's outside the poster for the film that we're watching. So how's that happen then? That's Inception.
That's serious meta stuff, isn't it? And it even says Freddie Francis's name on the poster.
It doesn't
have Roy Castle on the poster or Cushy or anyone, but
no. And it's also not the, if you research this poster itself, it's got Cushing dealing a deck of cards, right? Okay, but this one had Zambala. Dimbala. Well, hang on a minute. I've got a problem here, aren't I now?
Because it is Dimbala. Yeah,
it's Dimbala. Right. Anyway, so. Right.
If he doesn't like songs being robbed from him, Chris, I'm not sure how he takes to getting his name wrong.
Oh, damn. And it's got windy as well. That's what it is outside. It's not Bertie or whatever.
Your potted plant is going to come over and start choking you now while I'm watching.
I think it has moved as well. Right. Anyway. Right. So next. Almost gets hit by a car.
Yeah.
Bit more wind. He eventually gets home and he kind of struggles to get in the door, and he gets in the door, shuts the door. And then a window slams shut. So that's making me think that that window must have been open then.
It looked like the window had been opened already.
Yeah.
He's like he's living in a ground floor, flat That's somewhere. Right. It's a nice looking bachelor pad by all accounts. Yeah. It looks like a bachelor pad anyway.
He's got
even though he mentioned the mother-in-law, as I say, he must be divorced at this stage.
Yeah, they've spent...
Probably because he keeps swanning off to the West Indies and whatnot.
They've spent quite a bit of time in putting things in there that would sum up his character. Like,
yeah, it's got the piano and...
Yeah, yeah. Recording stuff and instruments.
Yeah.
Then another door shuts. Sorry, door slams. Then another window shuts. Bang. And he finds himself locked in.
Yeah. And he does another kind of slight comedy spot where he's making himself an old scotch. But he's got that, the soda water dispenser with the... and he fires a load into the glass.
I've always wanted one of those things, but I thought they were sort of like limited to Inspector Clouseau films and stuff like that.
Yeah, or Del Boy.
Yeah. So then this is another the electricity kind of turns off, so he's got no lights on. Another window shut. So this is the third window, I think, that's shut, or maybe the second. And then he realizes that somebody's in the house.
Yeah, he turns on, there's like a big standing lampshade. He manages to turn that on, and that's when Dembala appears.
Oh, was it absolutely Dembala, do you think? No, that makes sense.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But I don't know now.
It could have been one of the minions. But the thing is, what makes this guy a bit different is he's wearing like a cloth nappy type thing.
Yeah. Well, that's why I thought it was supernatural, because did he just hop off the plane like that and went straight to Roy Castle's house?
Well, I was wondering whether that's the reason why windows were open, because that's how
I'll tell you why I think it's Dembala, because he's credited as Dembala on IMDb, this guy. So, yeah, that's probably why I thought it. Other than that, I probably would have just thought this is one of the blokes.
You're right. The globe or whatever. Thomas Baptiste is Dembala.
Yeah,
he was a,
and again, not terribly frightening. It has to be said.
He's an opera singer in real life. Yeah, he was the least frightening villainous person. But the thing is, aren't we sort of on Dembala's side here? Like
completely. Yeah,
that he might be a jealous god, and he might be into like black magic and stuff. But so he actually hasn't done anything wrong, and in fact. This scene ends with all him doing is taking away the music.
Yeah, and making Roy Castle faint. I presume he just faints. I think the first time I seen it years ago, I probably thought, well, he's died of a heart attack or fright or whatever. But
we don't know. So now then, we see Dembala walk out the door that was previously locked, so he probably has got magic going for him, and... back on the train, like the kind of crossover effect, and so at that point, if I were Roy Castle, I'd be thinking, well, that's not actually that bad. I mean,
no, definitely not.
I shouldn't do what I'm about to do, but even if I did, at least I'll be a bit unscathed by it, and I'll probably.
Yeah, it's just a good lesson in copyright infringement. So
that's it then. That is Voodoo Lounge. What's it called? Voodoo?
Just Voodoo.
Just Voodoo. Yeah. Right. Back on the train then, and Peter Cushing then is asked to deal the fifth card.
Yeah.
And then that's it. That's the one that shows death. He doesn't show that again, does he?
I think he either shows it on this one or after Christopher Lee's. Yes. But he doesn't wait until the very end to reveal that, death is the alternative here.
So, he goes, what does that mean? what does it mean? I think when you look at what's happened so far, that is the story that ends the best for everyone. Because only one person... The one person that's got a problem is the one person that was breaking the law. Not even breaking the law. Breaking ethic code.
Yeah.
And that's
it. It's a real cautionary tale. Like he's not physically harmed. You know, nobody dies in this episode.
No.
So.
No, just a bit of a, there's just a bit of a storm, really. And we've all been in a bit of a storm. So. Anyway, right, okay, so that is now, what are we doing next then? So we've got two to go, have we? Yes, we got Disembodied Hand and Vampire. So in the next episode then of this special trilogy, we will be doing, we'll be going straight to Dracula. It's Dracula's turn.
Yes.
And then
we've a couple of vampires coming up, really.
Oh, we do. They must have been kind of like nodding and smiling when they did, when they saw this one.
It's like, yeah, yeah.
There's only one vampire, son. Right.
Anyway, probably okay. I would argue probably the two best stories out of it. But you know,
these two are the probably the actual horror stories of that that you probably could make into bigger pieces. Anyway, right. Okay.
We'll get to them.
We'll get to them. So keep your questions for later. I've got a couple of pages to go on my notebook. That's great. Right, Damo. We'll speak soon.
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye bye.
The tales of the unexpected.